Time for us to discuss the future of, and we're talking about the future of South Africa's apparel and footwear market, and also looking at the future of Temu, which is advertising aggressively. If you are on social media, there's absolutely no way you haven't seen Temu ad on Instagram. I haven't seen them on TikTok yet, but they are everywhere on the platform formerly known as Twitter, which no one calls X. They're also all over Instagram. And we're also looking at the news of South Africa's apparel and footwear market. Apparently, we love a shoe. We love some footwear, so much so that that market is worth $11 billion. And to talk about some of that, we're joined on the line by business strategist and columnist John Cherry. John, a very good morning to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Morning, Gug. Thank you.
So I was quite surprised. I mean, I knew there must be something there with the South African footwear and apparel market, but I was quite surprised that it is within or as much as $11 billion. That sounds like a pretty big number. Is it a pretty big number?
Yeah, it sounds to be, and I think it's a number which is growing. So, you know, if we just look at e-commerce in South Africa before the pandemic, the percentage of revenue that went through e-commerce, if you looked at retail, was around 1-2%. But since the pandemic, we've kind of been trained into trusting e-commerce a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are things like Checkers 60-60. We're much more comfortable with shopping at Superbalist or Takealot. And yeah, that number I think is up to 4 or 5%, which is a significant increase in a very short space of time. So in many ways, you know, you talk about $11 billion. We can now track that pretty accurately, specifically in within a category, because of the popularity of e-commerce and the data that we can now mine thanks to us using it.
Yeah.
Much more.
And do we know how much of that market or that $11 billion is local brands? Because, of course, there is the dominance of big brands, your Nikes, your Adidas, your Reeboks. Fila is back, you know, from the 90s. But we've also seen really big growth of local brands. So the likes of Batu, the likes of Drip, the likes of Vaya. So do we know what the split is between the big established global brands and the newer players who are local?
Yeah, look, I would guess that the local brands are still very much a niche, unfortunately. And I think it's because, you know, you mentioned Nike just as one brand. Nike is an enormous global brand, and they spend billions and billions on building that brand. It's going to be very difficult for a small niche player in South Africa to compete just on the volumes that I think Nike commands even in the local marketplace. So I think, yes, there's, you know, the opportunity is that nowadays, even a local shoe brand, they have access to the tools where they can build their own online shop. They can go and spend money on social media, just like Nike can. The difference is that Nike have got a world-class marketing team behind them and an enormous cachet of money, where they can literally dominate the mind share of a market thanks to that power. So I still say that we are a long, long way away from that. We can't compete.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are signs of growth and there is reason to be optimistic.
Yeah. And you were speaking about part of why we have insight or we even know what that market is looking like is because of e-commerce, so people shopping online. And, of course, one of the big players has been fast fashion brands online, whether it is, you know, a Fashion Nova, a Shein, and most recently, I didn't know of them until quite literally a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if it's because I've just been living under a rock, Temu. And why I know about them is because they are advertising aggressively. Every second ad on Twitter and now on my Instagram is from them. And I read a piece, I think it was, I forget where it is now, but it looked at Shein specifically, saying they are shipping 2 to 3 billion items, articles of clothing a year alone. I mean, and that's just them. That doesn't include, you know, Fashion Nova or any other e-commerce platform. So in addition to us being more willing to shop online, I imagine a lot of it has to do with the likes of Shein and Fashion Nova and Temu. But is all that glitters gold with these platforms?
Yeah, so Temu, if we just focus on that, I think what's interesting about Temu is that they only launched in South Africa in the middle of January this year. So I think you're on it. It's not like you've been hiding away and you weren't aware of it. They are brand new. And in the United States, they are very concerned about the competition coming from the likes of Temu or Shein in that market. Their response has been that they are turning to regulation to try and defend their market. The problem is that these companies are very, very clever and they are backed by enormous amounts of money. So just as an example, last year, Temu spent $3 billion on their advertising alone. So if I have to contextualize that, that's what Old Mutual is worth. So imagine taking Old Mutual, selling it, and taking the proceeds from that sale and just putting it into your advertising spend for 1 year.
Sure.
That's what they're essentially doing. So the reason that you're seeing it everywhere is because they're making sure that they crowd out advertising from everybody else.
Right.
So they're dominating the mindset.
Okay.
What I think is very interesting about Temu, and I wrote a piece in the Daily Maverick kind of going into their strategy. And the interesting thing about their strategy is that, in my mind, they're not necessarily an e-commerce company. What they are is a gaming company. When you go and buy something from Temu, the idea is that you're searching for bargains. And because you're in this mindset where, wow, things are really, really cheap. I can buy like a workwear jacket for $300. I can buy a drone for $500. So what happens is that you get into this idea and you get this sort of dopamine hit of finding the bargains and you put them in your cart and you check out and you kind of feel good about yourself. In that way, what they're doing is that they're keeping you on the app for longer because there's a lot to discover. And what's also really fascinating about their approach is that their online shopping is more like going to a casino than it is like shopping on Amazon. There are ways that you can almost like get free money. So if you spin the wheel of fortune, you get a 200 rand credit. Or if you take a chance on something like for a very limited period of time, there might be a 50% discount on that thing. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of captivating you and keeping you on the app longer so that you buy stuff. And in many ways, this isn't just a company that's selling you stuff. It's an entire region. So they represent thousands and thousands of merchants in China. And those merchants are the people that you're actually buying from. So you think you're buying from this company, Temu, you're not. It's just a platform that represents the merchants.
Right.
And they're not necessarily selling brands like Nike. They're selling products. So they're training a market to really buy value. You're going in and you're being trained to buy volumes of products rather than selecting brands that you desire. So in many ways, it's a new way of shopping. It's a brand new strategy. And, you know, if Takealot or Superbalist had to come and ask me to say, well, what do we do about it? I would say, well, you've got a real problem here because they've got things which you will never be able to turn on, being like this ecosystem of value and an app which actually presents itself as a game rather than an e-commerce store.
And there seems to also be some concerns, not just around the way that they're operating in terms of the, you know, from competitors, but there also seem to be concerns around privacy. I know there's a matter in the U.S., is it in Illinois, where Temu is being accused of pretty serious privacy violations, essentially being accused of gaining literally access to literally everything on your phone. I believe there's also a lawsuit in Australia particularly if you're using the app. So they also seem to be concerned about how they're using consumer data. But if you're saying this is, they're more of a gaming platform than a shopping platform, are consumers as concerned about data privacy or the security of their phone if, well, I'm playing a game and trying to find a fan for R5?
Right. So, first of all, I think it's very important that we just stop and take note of the irony of what you've just said, that the United States, where notoriously the laws around privacy are very, very relaxed, all of a sudden they now feel that, whoa, this company is transgressing privacy laws. In America, there's no such thing as the POPIA Act or, you know, anything to actually protect the consumer. It's kind of a free-for-all for business. So now they're starting to realize, wow, without regulation of our business environment, actually there might be some kind of, there might be a problem for consumers. So that's a bit ironic. I think in South Africa, we have very strict laws. But again, these companies are very, very clever. They move far quicker than regulators, and especially even regulators in South Africa. Although we've got these great laws, the POPIA Act, my feeling is that a company like Temu and the holding company can sidestep those things very, very easily. And I think exactly on that point, you know, you're kind of lulled into a sense of, wow, this is a very friendly place to buy things, because there's a lot of animation and there's little kittens that pop up and you spin a wheel here and all that kind of stuff. But absolutely, your behavior is being tracked, the time of day, what you buy, what you browse, how you convert, you know, the time that it takes for you to, you know, look at something and buy it. That's all monitored and analyzed. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But I suppose what happens is that when that aggregation of information is used to kind of transgress laws, then it becomes a bit of an issue. Mm-hmm. And potentially it might not just be legal laws. They might be transgressing an ethical line. So that's an interesting area in and of itself. Like, what does the regulation say, and how should the consumer really be protected here? We don't know, because in many ways, like, we're just not sure what kind of data is being captured and what it's being used for. But what I would suggest is that they would understand, like, the behavior of a marketplace, and then they'd be able to kind of front run the system or load the system so that they are obviously more efficient in what they show you and what kind of product gets produced for that specific region at whatever time of day. Mm. So, you know, I think it's just it's a brand new way of doing business, which we are still trying to understand. And in many ways, my big thing here is that it's not a single company. It's actually an economic region, which is making use of a platform in order to do trade better. So now they're trading directly with consumers. These are factories which are trading directly with consumers in a region, not just in South Africa, but around the world.
Yeah.
Which is very difficult for companies then to compete with.
Earlier on this year, South African retailers raised concerns about Temu, actually, accusing them of potentially exploiting tax loopholes. There was a statement through the South African Clothing and Textile Workers Union saying that the state should consider urgent changes to our tax rules on small items to ensure fair competition for local businesses. Because again, I don't know a South African retailer that can compete with, if you're able to get a jacket online for R100 or R200, I don't know that a local retailer is able to compete with that. And a Harvard Business Review article recently found that Shein, they paid $0 in tariffs on $30 billion in revenue. So there is this concern that, there's increased competition, which both established and smaller players are unable to compete with, but also an exploitation of existing tax regulations. That, as you say, governments don't move as quickly as the internet. They don't legislate as quickly as things happen.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting point. So on the article that I wrote, there were many, many comments of people saying, like, I ordered the things online and it cost me R1,000, but then when the bill came from the, you know, from the courier company, I had to pay an extra $500 or whatever on duties and all that kind of stuff. And that's exactly the point. I think, first of all, the holding company, Pinduoduo, is located in the Cayman Islands. So that's a holding company. The companies that then own Temu are all obviously Chinese-based, and they would then own a part of the holding company. So there's obviously major structuring going on from a tax perspective in that way. So they don't have a local South African office. They're not employing anybody in South Africa. They don't have warehouses or distribution centers in South Africa where the goods come to. They're shipping in directly. So that's the one side of it, is where, you know, who's paying the income tax on this? You know, what happens there? Then obviously there's questions around VAT. There's questions around the duties and excise that get paid on the direct shipment from China. So in many ways, it's not that they are doing something illegally, but I think it would be worthwhile just checking as to what that system is, and, you know, where are they competing more successfully that a local company cannot compete. But here's the thing. Regulation will only take you so far. This is where innovation comes in, is that in many ways the design of the system itself is far more agile than what a traditional company would be set up as. So if you go and buy things from the Foschini Group, you know, understandably, they've got an existing setup. They've got a value chain which is quite traditional. But what this company is doing is, through the use of technology, they're almost able to sidestep a lot of those traditional structures in order to work directly with the customer. And, yeah, at this stage, because we don't know and there's so much uncertainty, we kind of automatically go to, well, they must be flouting the law. That's not necessarily the case, but it would definitely be worthwhile investigating what's actually going on and where are the loopholes and where might they be getting an advantage, which is unfair.
An SMS, a WhatsApp message here says, hello, Gorgs, I've bought from Temu. All I can say is they sell poor quality and actually it's false advertising, which is the other thing. There's often tweets or posts from people who ordered a thing and when it arrived, it didn't quite look like what they expected. So they bought a handbag and when it arrives, it's the size of a cell phone, or, you know, it's not quite what you expected. But by that point, I guess you've spent the money. I guess you can return it. But that also seems to be quite a big part of the business model, or some significant part of the business model, is it looks one way on the platform, but when it arrives, it may not necessarily look that way.
Right. And I, you know, again, that's why I say, for me, this is far more about gaming than it is actually buying quality items from a store. Because, you know, once you've got the thing, you've probably bought like 10 things. And if the handbag that you bought didn't quite like crack it, are you going to send it back? Is it worth the effort? Ugh, it was only $100. Let me just like overlook it this one time. And I think that's how the business model really works, is that with the volumes that they are sending out, I think that the number of people who go to the effort of complaining or, you know, of sending it back are minimal. But understand as well that that's not necessarily their objective. Their objective is to go into a region and pretty much it's a scorched earth policy where you go in and you just advertise as much as possible in that area and acquire as many customers as possible within a short space of time. Once you've got that customer, obviously now you can communicate directly with them, and in many ways you've almost captured that customer's attention. Potentially in the future they might transition to a system which is a little bit offering better quality items. That could be the case. But that's, you know, in innovation terms, they talk about this approach being one of disruption. What you do is you go and you sell to a market which is being overlooked by the players that are in that marketplace. And in many ways, this is exactly what they're doing. They're offering very cheap value into a market where potentially there are a lot of people who've never bought stuff online, but because it's so cheap, I'll give it a go. You know, let me try it out. But once you've tried it out, the possibility of you doing it again is high. And that's what they're really banking on. They're not banking on you falling in love with the brand and, you know, always coming back to buy the same thing. They're banking on the fact that they've broken the seal of you buying directly from merchants in China, and they can now use that to their advantage in the future.
Mm. Let's go to Ethne in Johannesburg, who has a question. Ethne, a very good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. I just want to share an experience that I had with a company called Shame that has been bombarding me with emails and offers and that sort of thing. So I decided to place an order, which I did. And obviously I paid for it, and they said it would be delivered within a reasonable amount of time. It never arrived. You try to get hold of them. Everything is in Chinese. So you can ask for it to be translated into English, but there's no way that you can ever get back to the organization to say that the garment didn't arrive. After I had used Shame, I actually went on to Hello Peter, and anybody who has any ideas of using Shame, please see what the reviews are, because they get, if there was a possibility to do minus stars, people would be giving that rating. They are appalling, and it's a ripoff.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Jonathan?
Yeah, I think in many ways, The reality is that these companies are doing so much business that, you know, do they really care? But yes, exactly on that point, buyer beware. Do not, you've got to understand that you are dealing with an enormous organization. It's not like buying from a corner store where you are protected. And even on that point, you know, where does the Consumer Protection Act play a role within this new paradigm? What protection do you have as a customer? Things are pretty hazy because they don't necessarily have an office in South Africa where a regulator or a judgment can be served on that office. So that's why it is. Be very, very careful when doing business with these companies. It really is a little bit like the Wild West, and you know, you take your chances. And when it works, yes, you get items at a reasonable price. If it doesn't work, well, you pretty much need to just write it off as school fees, unfortunately.
Jonathan, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Googs. Thanks so much. Have a good day.
You too. That's business strategist and columnist Jonathan Cherry joining us this morning for the future of e-commerce, the future of our shopping habits on the internet.